Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today, my interview is with Rutger van Wyk, the winemaker of Stark Conde. And I hope I did his name right. And, you know, I think Rutger, now it's not Rutger, it's Rutger. And, well, it's a typical me podcast. I screw up names, and you'll hear me say them quickly and almost mumble it under my breath, because, again, I'm a coward. But this guy is so impressive. Like, if I was going to put in the category of, you know, young, up-and-coming winemaker, he would be the stereotype of it. He's already won tons of awards, and he makes his own wine now, and he's, you know, worked in harvests in Burgundy. And just, he's got a really impressive story. You're gonna like Rutger a lot. And this winery, incredible Cabernet Sauvignon and Syrah. And the crazy thing is the prices. Like, their Stellenbosch series is, you know, going to be under $30. And this is still going to be a cab that's spent, you know, plenty of time aging and in these beautiful plots of land. And it goes for under $30. So if you want to find like a really good cab, still a lot of dark fruit, cedar, herb, and, you know, good finish and nice tannic structure, and be under $30, I got to tell you, like, the value you're going to get for the quality of these wines is pretty crazy. I did see at the LCBO, and I apologize for people listening outside of Ontario, but I know they have some of their 2018, the Stellenbosch series of Cabernet Sauvignon. And go grab it. Like, I'm going to be driving around the city today. I might grab a couple bottles myself. And they have a couple different series, the Stellenbosch series, the Three Pines series, which are wines coming from their higher altitude single vineyard wines. And then the highest level of his Cabernet is the Oud Nectar, and I'm sure I mispronounced that, which is, you know, just classic Bordeaux blend. It's like 74% Cab, then Petit Verdot, and actually much less Merlot. They're getting rid of a lot of more of their Merlot, so replacing it with other Bordeaux varietals. All right, that's enough on the technical stuff. Basically, they're really good wines at a price, considering the grape and the depth, it's a damn good price. What I loved about this winery is a ton of different things. First, it's gorgeous. And as I explain in the interview, or I say in the interview, it is a postcard. Like, this is a postcard. Like, I'm surprised there isn't wedding after wedding going on. We're literally just a lineup of brides and grooms just standing there, you know, like it's a drive-through. It's gorgeous. It's one of the prettiest tasting rooms I've ever been to. And also the backdrop. You're in a valley, a giant valley. You'll feel like you're in the Alps. And I know the name of the valley begins with like a J, but I'm not even going to attempt it. But it's gorgeous. It's dramatic. And it's part of the key of what makes these wines so good is they come from different plots all along this valley. And they have some of the highest vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon in all of South Africa, like, you know, over 500 meters high. And the cool thing is we got a tour with the owner, with Jose Conde. And first off, it was so cool someone else driving, because right before we went to this winery was the moment where I dropped off my rental car. And for anyone who's done any sort of travel of more than a week, and, you know, you get that rental car for like 8-9 days, it's both so important. It allows you freedom, it allows you to travel, but it also kind of freaks you out. There's always that little bit of pressure, especially early on, you know, when you're driving down the different side of the road and it's not your car and there's kind of different rules. There is a pressure and a stress. And of course, no one ever gets the insurance. Who's ever gotten the insurance on a car? So, but it's in the back of your mind. Where do I find parking? How do I pay for parking? Is this car going to be okay? Also, the car that we had, like most people, it was the cheapest one I could find. So there was no guts. In this case, Jose's Jeep, lots of guts. Like, I'm telling you, something out of the A-Team. But it was needed because we're driving up the side of a mountain, like super high up, and you look to your left, and or I guess, yeah, my left, and it's like, oh my God, the mountain drops off here. But the great part was, this is where the learning happens. And this is sort of the reminder of, to truly understand the wine you're having, it certainly helps to stand where the grapes come from. Because Jose would point to a plot of land and say, okay, our Cabernet from there, it gets X amount of sun because where it is in the mountain. And that one there is 200 meters up and is on a different angle, and the sun exposure is different. So the wines from that plot of land is going to taste different from there. And the reason is in XYZ. And you go through it and it makes sense. Like, it makes sense. You know, a lot of these wines, they're blended. And it's like, okay, we take some from here because it brings us this much power and this gives us more finesse. And it's artistic. And Roediger's going to talk about that. We talk about sort of the artistic nature of being a winemaker, of blending from different sources. And that's really cool. And you can understand it when you're in a tasting room or talking to someone, but man, on a higher level when you actually see it. It was just a great tour. And I know I sound like a broken record, but go to Stellenbosch. The moment it's not difficult to get home, go there. You know, and this, you're going to feel completely safe. This is not a safety thing. This is a pain in the ass thing. It is, people listening, you know how difficult, if you've been lucky enough to travel, how difficult it is to go home. If you can find these wines, I highly recommend them. There's like the Stellenbosch series, the Three Pines series, which are basically higher altitude, and then the highest one, the Oude Nectar, which comes from the highest elevation. It's around like 550 meters. And again, your classic Bordeaux variety. As the LCBO, I know they have some of their wines there, but you're going to have to do some digging and searching for it. So I would, again, highly, highly recommend. Anyway, my interview today, really impressive young man, and I guess I could say young man. I think I'm at least 10, 12 years older than him. At what point can you call someone a young man? Like, what has to be the age discrepancy? Anyway, just the growth of this guy. Like, Roediger has got a great story about where he's come from and where he is. And I talking to him, and he's got his own winery as well, Caratara Wines. And again, he makes, those ones are great Pinots and Chardonnays. So look out for that as well. But has won a ton of awards. Will probably win more awards. Has worked, worked under some of the most impressive winemakers in all of South Africa as well. So a great story. I'll say this right now. And Roediger said it was on his part. So we can't blame my computer or my Wi-Fi. And I know it isn't great. And I get made fun of for it all the time. There's always that person, you know, in Zoom meetings. By the way, can't wait for us to not have to say that person in Zoom meetings. But that person in Zoom meetings where they're always pausing and their computer's all scraggly, that's usually me. But Roediger said, hey, Wi-Fi is not great where I am right now. So at some point, the quality is going to dip in and out a little bit. I did my best to clean it all up, but I wanted to leave most of it in. So there'll be the odd word here or there. You might not be able to pick up, but it's like in 10 words of a sentence, you'll pick up 7.5 of them, and you'll understand what is being said. But I wanted to keep it in because he's an impressive guy. He was a great guy, and I thank him for taking the time. And again, shout out to the Wines of South Africa for helping to set up these incredible tours. So that's enough yammering from me. Enjoy the pod. Here is Roediger van Wyk.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And live from Stellenbosch, South Africa, the winemaker for Starkande, it is Roediger van Wyk. Roediger, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Hi, lovely to be on your show. It's a real pleasure. Looking forward to the chat.
Yeah, well, let's start here. And I always want to go back to the beginning. I read that you grew up wanting to be a rugby player. How did you go from that to just being interested and passionate about wine?
That's probably a very good question. No one has ever asked me that question. So I'm the youngest of three brothers, and rugby is a very big thing in South Africa because we, you know, like to kick a ball in the air and chase each other and be very physical, even if that makes sense. And I think it's every boy's dream, you know, in South Africa to be a Springbok, our national rugby team, a team player in that team. And what's more fun than having a few pints of beer while playing a physical sport? So I think that's where the alcoholic side of the whole story comes in. I grew up in a small community that loves sports. I'd like to come together, watch rugby, have a barbecue, have a few glasses of beer or wine. I was in a big, in my culture, but it's starting to. And then, through high school years, realized that my way of thinking and personality, was upstream or a bit different. I wanted to do something that's very interesting. And from a small community on the south coast of South Africa, well, winemaking was very appealing. And that's how I got into the whole winemaking thing. I moved up to Stellenbosch, the Cape Winelands, and studied at the University of Stellenbosch and did my 4 years in knowledge in viticulture. And I must say, every year, the passion grew, and I haven't left Cape Winelands pretty much after that.
How hard was it to get into the business? You, as you said, you were studying at Stellenbosch University, but go back almost a decade, 2013, as a young student coming out of Stellenbosch, how hard was it for you to then find work?
Oh man, like, to be honest, you know, you, as a student, I've always had this dream. Stellenbosch is basically the same like Napa, you know, the Napa of California.
Yes.
It's beautiful, you know, there's a lot of fourth, fifth generation farmers involved in Stellenbosch. You know, there's a lot of different generations here. And it sort of was, I always knew that it was a massive dream to be a winemaker in Stellenbosch. But, you know, at the back of your mind, you always knew that, you know, is it really possible? Are people accept you? And I must say, that's where the whole sport connection comes in. Like, it feels like it was meant to be, because with sport, you know, you always have appointments, your team loses, sometimes you don't make the cut of the team to play in the first team. And that taught me a lot of discipline. It doesn't look like that now, but I also did a little bit of swimming in high school. And that you know, swimming is probably one of the most disciplined sports that's out there. And yeah, you sort of got used to, you know, having disappointments as a and you know, falling and you just busting yourself up and getting back on course. So yeah, you know, I knew that if you work hard enough and opportunity would arise, you know, you hear the cities and all the billionaires and millionaires saying this on TV, like, if opportunity comes knocking, you should just kick the door down. I hope this friendly podcast, I didn't want to say the other word now. just kick the freaking door down and grab that opportunity. And yeah, you know, people probably thought I was crazy, because back then I had a whole lot of different dreams and ideas, you know, to start my own brand, to work as a winemaker in one of the most prestigious wine farms in Stellenbosch and maybe in South Africa too. And, you know, people didn't probably just see on their faces. They were like, ah, oh, like, how can you accomplish that? Like, that's impossible. But yeah, like I said, you know, different personality, like a challenge. And eventually I got lucky and I kicked down the door. And yeah, I am, you know. It's actually crazy when you look back. Like, yeah, from 2013, it doesn't even sound that long ago.
Nope. But okay, well, let's go to some of the big moments for you. And I do want to get into the wines of Stark Condi and also your own winery as well, where you make Chardonnay and Pinot Noir for Caratara Wines, which is your winery. One guy that I met during my travels in Stellenbosch and you worked with back in 2014 was Aubrey Bieslaar, and I'm sure I mispronounced his last name, from Canacop. I was wondering if you could talk about those days back in 2014.
Yeah, so actually, after my university years, you know, a lot of partying happened there. I got my degree. I was fortunate to catch my degree in my 4 years. And I was approached by the Cape Winemakers Guild, which is it's basically a membership of, I think it's 45 members now, some of the top winemakers in South Africa, and I would say probably in the world too. They had a program called the Prodigy Program that actually helped people from lesser disadvantaged, you know, areas and groups that didn't have the opportunity, you know, to study winemaking like a few decades ago. We basically get placed, it's a three-year internship, actually, let me start off there, of which you get placed at a wine farm of these members, and you work 1 year with different mentors and winemakers. And I was quite fortunate to work with Aubrey in my first year. You know, I must say, actually, Canonkop is a very well-known farm in South Africa and across the world. We probably distinguish it as our first growth. But as a student of color, I never knew what Canonkop was, you know, like, I just thought, oh, okay, I got a job in my first year as an intern, and I should just embrace that and work hard, and maybe something will happen. I didn't know who Aubrey Bieslaar was. He's probably one of the top winemakers in South Africa too. He's won World Winemaker at the IWSP, I think twice already or three times. And, you know, walking in the room, I just thought, oh, this is just a general, I just want to pick his brain. Little known, like during the year, like after 6 months, I thought, oh, this is actually a big deal. I'm working at a very prestigious. So, yeah, it was very nice. You know, they have some of those Pinotage vines there. They speak Pinotage, which is uniquely South African variety. And worked very hard, you know. They still use a very traditional method of winemaking, which actually played a big role in my way of winemaking several years for. So they use a pichage or punch downs, and we did that literally every 2 hours during the fermentation of our wines. So there wasn't a lot of sleep, there was a lot of sweat, there was a lot of drinking, and there was a lot of muscle building going on.
It's crazy.
Which I obviously loved as a 23-year-old man back then.
It must have been great. It is crazy there. I recommend everyone go check out Catacop, where they still just have the open vats, and you know you're either punching, you're just punching down all the time. So then from there, I'm curious about you working as a harvest intern in Burgundy at Domaine Lucien Jacob, and I was wondering just what your experiences were like in Burgundy.
Yeah, so you know after that we also got the opportunity, as part of the Cape Winemakers Guild Protégé program, to experience a harvest in France. Actually, specifically, we had a Burgundy program that in your second year, all the interns would go over and experience that harvest. You know, it was amazing. But already, you know, in my years at Canoncorp, personally, I knew that what I wanted to achieve as a winemaker one day and the styles of wine I wanted to make. So I already knew, like, Canoncorp being a stepping stone, me going to Burgundy being a stepping stone, I knew that I had to experience, you know, 100% of everything, the culture, the wine drinking, the parties, the, you know, picking of the vineyards. And yeah, it was an amazing, eye-opening experience.
And then let's go from there now to Stark Condi, which is where, by the way, people listening, is where we met, and Rudger gave me and my party a tour of the facilities. By the way, absolutely gorgeous. Just, it is a postcard, the Stark Condi winery in Stellenbosch. I was wondering if you could tell me about your early days and your journey to being the winemaker for, you know, some pretty incredible wines.
Yeah, so crazy story, you know. I don't know what time amount we have with this chat, but as a student in my fourth year, that's the first experience I had with Stark Condi wines. Our graduation class, we literally decided on having a few glasses of wine at this beautiful estate. And I really, you know, fell in love with the winery. As a student back then, I was like very shocked at the prices because it was way out of my budget. And I tried to ask the tasting room advisor back then, like, you know, is there like an internship or assistant winemaker job? Because I'm just finishing my degree. And back then, Stark Condi was building and you know, growing. So they were still small. Jose, the owner, was doing everything by himself. So there was no position open, right? So then after I went to the Cape Winemakers Guild program, the internship program, and literally the week we flew out to Burgundy, this position, assistant winemaker at Stark Condi. And you know, I was like still in the daze and excited to go to Burgundy. And you know, I felt on top of like nothing can stop me. And I just applied, you know, I had nothing to lose because you're moving to France and you're going to experience the Burgundian harvest for 10 weeks. The Burgundian was traveling in France for 10 weeks. And literally the Sunday, I got offered the job as assistant winemaker at Stark Condi, and we flew out on Monday. And appreciate everything that, you know, gave me that opportunity. You literally said, go and enjoy Burgundy, learn as much as you can. And yeah, we would love to know the experience we had and the knowledge bring back. So when I got Burgundy, I actually started at Stark Condi Wines as assistant winemaker in a permanent job, you know, in Stash. So that's like a full circle of goals and dreams that I had.
How would you describe the wines of Stark Condi?
It's actually, you know, I think every winemaker would probably feel that his or her wines are very unique. So we actually, like you said, it's a very beautiful part of the country. It's probably one of the hidden gems of the winelands. They are smack bam in the middle of in a valley, surrounded by mountains. It reminds me, you know, of the Swiss Alps. The soils that we have, very ancient soils. You know, South Africa is some of the oldest soils in the world. You have this pure expressions in our wines because of these soils. So on our estate, we have pure decomposed granitic soils with good clay content. And it's just perfect to grow Cabernet Sauvignon as a variety. And what makes our wine stand out and unique is it's very elegant, it's refined. You know, some areas that's very well known for their Helderberg, the areas around us are more bigger and bolder in tannins and color. Where I think we and our wines are more, it's a combination of old and new world. You know, you have that refined old world style with a lot of power from the new world. I would typically describe wines in that manner. That makes sense?
Oh, yeah. No, it absolutely makes sense. And also the Syrahs. When I was there tasting, you know, we just went through a lot of the portfolio. And what I liked is it was that nice balance between the power and the restraint. And it wasn't overly fruity. So it certainly had a, you know, an old world sort of feel to it. But you could certainly tell the difference between your cabs and say something from Bordeaux. And I mean that in a good way, because I think like Cabernet, what I didn't realize is just the importance of Cabernet Sauvignon to the South African wine industry.
Yeah, I think Cabernet Sauvignon plays a massive role, you know. That's why they probably call the varietal King Cab. Cabernet will always be king. I think it ages gracefully. And gosh, you know, the terroir that we have here, the growing conditions that we have here, is just very well suited to the varietal. And what makes it special here in Stellenbosch specifically, the areas are so unique and it has different expressions of Cabernet Sauvignon. And, you know, a drop of Cabernet is always, it ages gracefully. And I think, you know, after a few years of age, it just brings, I think, fun.
Sorry to interrupt. How much fun is it to just play with the grapes that you guys have at Stock Condi? Because I got a tour of the entire estate, and you have, you know, some vineyards are at one altitude, the others are like 500 meters higher. They get different amount of sun and temperature. As a winemaker, how much fun is it playing with all the different grapes you have?
Yeah, you know, I must actually tell you a story. Like in school, as a sport lover, I, you know, never liked art and culture. You know, I was very bad in drawing a picture. And yeah, that subject just never worked for me. And now that you're actually mentioning it, I was actually having a laugh the other day, is that we have such a variety of aspects, slopes. I always come to think that, you know, probably also in full circle where I didn't like art and culture, but now as a winemaker, you're probably an artist in itself because you're working with different flavors, different, you know, colors, and you have this canvas in the cellar that you can actually just make a nice art piece. If you understand what I mean, that's a very romantic term that I use now.
Yeah, you know what? That's funny. I've never even heard it described that way, but it's kind of part farming, part science, and part art is what you're doing when you're making your wines.
Yeah, true. And actually, a lot of people don't realize that you sort of have to be a marketer to sell your product, and you have to balance the book. So you probably,
too. Yeah, no, that's a good question. How hard is it for you? Because the more you do this, and you've been doing it for ages now, as a winemaker, you probably want to make your idea of the perfect wine, but you also have to make money. So maybe you've got to make a wine that'll fit for a larger profile of drinkers. Is there ever sort of that push and pull between the artist and the accountant?
Oh, yeah. Like, very good question again. Like that literally happens every day. You know, that's why as a student, I've learned a lot from boss Jose Conde. We always, you know, get discussion where, yes, you can be a wine nerd and you can enjoy these of making wine and drinking unique things, but you should always also understand your product and your market that you want to sell it to, because at the end of the day, you have to pay bills, right? And you have to pay salaries. And there's so many people that's dependent on you that you always have to make the right also decision. But in a way, you shouldn't also forget like what you are and who you are and with what product you work with. Like you're working with wine, you're working with a product that people enjoy and not just, you know, physically, or it's also about the experience too. So we were joking about that actually now, but you have to be a farmer, you have to be a scientist, you have to be an artist, you have to be an accountant. Like, I always tell my wife, like, this is probably the most diverse job, because you basically plan all those different industries and actually, you know, blend it into like one job.
It's so true. How important was this? You won the Diners Club Young Winemaker of the Year in 2018. How important was that for you?
Oh man, it was a special moment, you know. Like I probably, in front of people, I tried to be modest about it, but you know, it's like, for me, it was like winning the Super Bowl. Like, you were jumping inside, you were proud, you were very happy. Because as a student, you know, we were talking about that a little bit earlier, I had these dreams, these goals, and actually I never told people that, but to win like Young Winemaker or Winemaker of the Year in South Africa, that was the goal of mine. People would probably laugh at that goal because, you know, I'm a first generation winemaker. I don't even come from the country. Like, who are you to win this competition? And yeah, I actually had a very nice moment that evening, which I'll never forget. Actually shed a tear also, you know, when I was alone. Because it yeah, knew that it's just that you, like, if you work hard, you will achieve great things. And that just happened that night. And it meant a lot to me, you know. I think people started about me a little bit more, just taking notes of the wines and who I am and my story. So, yes, I think personally, I think that was upward curve in my story, and just another tick in my goals and dream box.
Yeah, and just validates you and validates the work you've done. So then let's go to the other side, the more negative side for a moment. I read this quote from you about how working at wine shows, you were often misjudged for a runner for ice or someone who works in the tasting room. You know, they didn't realize that you were the winemaker. And I'm wondering, how annoying / how painful was it just when that misperception that would come at you?
Yeah, you know, it hurt a little bit back then. But also, I was very younger. I was still, you know, thinking I was at the top of the world, you know, an intern working at Canon Corp and working at Star Conde. I'm a lot more wiser now. And I've actually embraced that. Like, I like to, you know, surprise people. I like people to taste the wines and see the action and see how delicious it is, and then tell them, hey, I'm actually the winemaker. I'm not the guy giving you, you know, ice blocks. it depends on how you see it. You know, do you see the rose for its petals, or do you see the rose for its thorns? And, you know, I think the industry is so young, and what I want to do actually is, our country is so diverse with different cultures, different experiences. And I want, you know, to combine that into one and diversify our industry more. I think that's one of South Africa's strongholds in the world, is that diversity is very strong, and we have unique stories, beautiful areas, and people should just come out and see that a little bit more.
By the way, before I continue, I love that rose petal versus the thorn. I love that that expression. That was great. And we'll get into Stellenbosch, and I'll say it now because I want to talk about your wines with Karatara. But everyone listening, and we'll say it again, you got to visit Stellenbosch. It's incredible. It is beautiful. The wine culture, the wine tourism. I can't think of any place that does it better. Tell them, I'd love to go now real quick into your wines. You when we met, you were talking about you were getting ready for your own Chardonnay, and Karatara, your winery, it's a Chardonnay and Pinot Noir house, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So yeah, I got the opportunity to start my own wine brand called Karatara. For people that are listening, if you Google it, you know, you see that label. Yeah, I think everyone, you know, every winemaker or artist or chef do their own thing and express themselves in their own way without any other people having, you know, influence into your thoughts. And that is literally me, basically my story, my experiences, and trying to be very inclusive to the world. I want the brand for me should be a little more urban. I want people not to be intimidated by the wines, because sometimes the growing class in the world are sometimes or feels intimidated, especially, you know, with bar, because people sometimes don't understand Pinot Noir. But, you know, in South Africa or Africa in this heat, what's not better than a nice cool glass of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay?
Absolutely. And in 2000, Wine Spectator's February 2020, one of your Pinots was featured in 9 Pinot Noirs for $30 or less. So congrats to that. And I was wondering, just how would you describe your wines and your philosophy?
My philosophy is very much minimal intervention. So our Stalkorne wines, where I'm the winemaker in Stellenbosch, we focus on estate grown fruit, which is organically certified, organically farmed. And Corotara gives me actually the freedom and to go out on the road and look for interesting vineyards that are funky, and that I can actually build a relationship with the farmers, you know, and farm workers and have an impact on that. The whole list thought or working of the wine industry is very important to me too. So yes, it's not just about good quality grapes. That is the most important thing. So searching for special sites, great coordinates that, you know, have great teams that work with these wines. And then when bringing it to the cellar, it's literally just taking the process. It's just about the process. Letting it finish, minimal intervention, like I mentioned. And yeah, like expressing that area where I grew that grapes in, and finding the different areas. So the Pinot and the Chardonnay, a lot of people have focused on single vineyards. I think that's the whole new trending thing around the world, you know, older vineyards, single vineyards. But for me, my brain works a little bit different. I think because South Africa is so great in diversity, you have different and unique sites, Stellenbosch to the cooler climate areas in the Overberg and Elgin, closer to, you know, the oceans, that oceanic influence. And each area, you know, gives characteristics and different qualities. And I just combine that, press the winelands of Africa in like one wine, two wines, if you understand what I mean.
It's the artist in you coming out, and it's not about just being pigeonholed. And listen, I love single vineyard wines as much as the next person, but you're right. In a very small area, you have such different geographical features in terms of close to the water, away from the water, high up in the mountains, more in the valley. So it gives you different expressions of these grapes.
Yeah, true. And I try to, you know, embrace the unique qualities that all those areas bring to Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And I also have a style of wine in my mind that I think, you know, consumers would really like. When I say that, I think of, you know, fresher wines, more drinkable wines, especially when you're in warmer areas like South Africa, and, you know, or maybe on the west coast of the United States. You want to drink fresher wines, wines that are drinkable, you know, that I like, you know. Just mention that I like to have a few glasses of wines if I don't have to, you know, drink or drive around. So I like people to enjoy wines and not just have one glass. Like if you want to have another bottle, why not? So fresher wines that are very aromatic and very drinkable. That's summary for my wines.
For people who've never been there, what would be your sales pitch to come to the Stellenbosch region? I mean, there's Robertson, there's a lot of wine areas not that far from Cape Town. For me, it was an eye-opening experience. What would you tell people about the area?
Well, there's so many things to do. Let's start off, you know, the rand exchange rate. It's I think for Canadian and US people, it's very nice. I think you
yes.
can have a nice time. You probably know that now.
Yeah, if I can interrupt for a second, Canadians, get to Cape Town right now. It is the Rand versus Canadian dollar is ridiculous. We had, like, for the three of us, we had dinner and a nice bottle of wine and appetizers, and it wasn't even 100 Canadian. It's ridiculous right now.
Yeah, so you can have a very nice experience. And, you know, we talk about Stellenbosch, we talk about Robertson, we talk about Elden. We have these different areas that actually offer unique cultural experiences. You know, we have Table Mountain where you can go up, and it's one of the, I think, wonders of the world. Very beautiful area with Lion's Head. You have the beautiful beaches of South Africa, and actually where I grew up, called George, on the south coast. It's beautiful. It's filled with beach life. You know, it's you have different things from different areas of the world combined in South Africa. That's probably my summary and my sales pitch for people. You have beautiful mountains like the Alps in Europe. You have, you know, the beaches like the south of France or the Mediterranean areas in Europe. You have wine country like in the US or in Australia. And I must say our food and culinary, you know, experiences are mind-blowing, yeah. So, yeah, please get out to South Africa, people.
And if you climb Table Mountain, don't do it when it's really windy because you won't be able to take the cable car back down. We climbed up to the top only to find out we had to climb back down again.
Oh, don't have a glass of wine when you're up there. You might not come back.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, here's the thing. If you're going to have a glass of wine at the top, you better make sure you got the cable car because you're not going to want to do it any other way. Rutger, I love your journey. Congratulations from everything from, you know, Stellenbosch University, the Cape Winemakers Guild Protege Program, working in some crazy wineries and now making your own wine. And I wish you nothing but success going forward. And, you know, we'll be watching. I can't wait to try some of your own wines. And I can't wait to keep finding the Stock Condi, which can be found in Ontario. So really appreciate you doing the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's an amazing privilege. You know, yeah, we're just getting started. That's probably be the first 6 or 7 years that we've probably been talking about. And I think there's a few more years, several years to come up. So let's see what happens in the future.
I can't wait. Thanks so much, Rutger.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.